You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
The collection of sayings that we call Proverbs represents centuries of lived wisdom, passed down, argued over, revised, and refined in real communities dealing with real life. It's part of what's come to be known as wisdom literature. These aren't commandments carved in stone, not creeds enforced with threats of expulsion, just hard-won wisdom, observations about how life actually works. And one of those observations is brutally simple. A joyful heart is good medicine. Not optimism, not denial, not distraction. Joy as a remedy to our ills, which, in the face of the cruelty, fear, chaos, and exhaustion dominating our world right now, may sound a little Pollyanna-ish. If we're going to talk about joyful hearts, we need to be very clear about what we mean and what we don't mean. I'm not talking about looking on the bright side. I'm not talking about keeping things light, and definitely not advocating easing our consciences by ignoring injustice. I want to encourage us to take Proverbs seriously enough to see that a joyful heart, along with humor and satire, have long been essential tools for resisting authoritarianism, be it political or religious.
Our words of wisdom are from Proverbs chapter 17, verse 22.
A joyful heart is good medicine, but a crushed spirit dries up the bones.
Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Thanks be to God.
Some of you might remember 10 years ago this week when we hosted legendary author and theologian Harvey Cox here at the Fountains. You know he's a questionable theologian because he's also a saxophone player. Here he is with our band. Back in December of 1969, Harvey wrote an article for Playboy magazine entitled, For Christ's Sake. In it, he laid out the problems with a dour and killjoy Jesus. And surprise, surprise, the Fred Berger sketch that accompanied it, The Laughing Christ, created way more controversy than the article or the nude centerfold of the magazine. People didn't want their beloved image of Jesus as a one-dimensional, suffering, sacrificial lamb ready to carry the burden of our sin, hatreds, and jealousy to be unsettled. Serious Jesus only, thank you very much. But throughout the Gospels, you see Jesus' appreciation of a sense of humor. In the Gospel of John, Nathanael hears that Jesus is from Nazareth and says, "Can anything good come from Nazareth?" An obvious dig that Jesus can only be some kind of a hick. And how does Jesus respond? Here is an Israelite without guile. In other words, here's a guy I can trust to tell the truth. And as Jesus clearly appreciates someone who speaks their mind with a bit of wit, Nathanael subsequently joins the movement. Thomas Merton, the American Trappist monk, was once asked, "How can you tell if a person has gone through inner spiritual transformation?" Merton said, "It can be difficult to tell, but holiness is usually accompanied by a wonderful sense of humor." And that alone should be all the evidence anyone needs in critiquing our current national crisis. Why? Because our president has absolutely no sense of humor. Just ask Jimmy Kimmel, Trevor Noah, or any of the other jesters who've leveled teasing criticism at the president. Throughout history, wise rulers have employed court jesters, not because they loved laughter, but because they understood power. The jester was the one person licensed to mock the throne, to puncture arrogance with humor, and to say what everyone else was afraid to say. Because ridicule shines a light on things that prefer the darkness. However, when regimes grow brittle or authoritarian, jesters are threatened, then censored, then punished, then erased. A pattern that repeats across history. And here's the problem with our chaotic world right now. Cruelty is celebrated as funny, and mocking the vulnerable is praised as free speech. Meanwhile, humor that challenges power is condemned as disrespectful. Why? As Robert Reich has observed, Trump's fragility toward ridicule shows he understands that humor undermines tyrannical power. Authoritarian movements, be they political or religious, have one thing in common. They cannot stand being laughed at. They're also suspicious if anyone anywhere is having fun without them. And there's a long, long Christian tradition of joylessness. The more grim, the more serious, the more joyless, the more faithful you must be. Why? Because God is most pleased when no one is enjoying themselves, of course. My grandmother's church believed signs of true holiness was no cards, no drinking, no dancing, and no movies. Tattoos were absolutely forbidden, perhaps explaining why tattoos had become so popular among disaffected evangelicals as a way of sticking it to their elders. This is the Christianity we all recognize in Saturday Night Live's Church Lady. And whether we like it or not, for many people outside the church, that is what Christianity still looks like: judgmental and humorless. C.S. Lewis tells a story about a schoolboy who, when asked what he thought God was like, replied that as far as he could make out, God is always snooping around to see if anyone is enjoying themselves and then trying to stop them. Which is why when I attend a party or gathering where people don't know I'm a preacher, I try to keep from admitting what I do for a living as long as possible, so as to avoid the hush. That's that moment when people desperately think back over what they've just said to me that will damn them to hell. I found that when I have a chatty seatmate on long flights, the last thing I want to do is let people know I'm a pastor. They either want to spend the trip confessing or trying to convince me of why golf is a satisfactory religion. So to avoid prolonged conversations, I generally tell them my Living the Questions partner, Jeff, and I produce adult videos. It's true, and it usually shuts them up. So let's be clear. Jesus was not a grim man. If you actually read the Gospels, Jesus is constantly at dinner parties with people the religious folks disapproved of and is frequently accused of drinking too much. He even stays at a wedding party so long that they run out of wine and then, to keep the party going, supplies better wine than the hosts provided in the first place. And more than that, he's making people laugh. But because good Christians are generally such killjoys, they don't know it. Think about those great Jesus sayings that have entered our collective vocabulary, but that most good Christians get wrong. When Jesus tells his followers to respond to being slapped by turning the other cheek, he wasn't advocating being a doormat. He was recommending a clever form of resistance. If the person wanted to hit you again, they either had to use their right fist, which acknowledges you as an equal, or use their culturally forbidden left hand, which shamed them. Sure, they can still hurt you, but they can no longer demean you. This was creative defiance that exposed the abuse without copying it. Same with if they take your coat, give them your shirt as well. If someone sued you for your coat, Jesus said, you might as well give them your shirt as well. Which, yes, in a two-garment society, leaves you to walk out of court naked. And here's the punchline we miss, but everyone in Jesus' audience would have known. In Jewish tradition, the shame of nakedness belongs not to the naked person, but to the one who caused the nakedness or sees the nakedness. Jesus flips the moral tables. The victim keeps their dignity. The system is exposed. Then there's go the extra mile. Roman soldiers were legally allowed to conscript locals to carry their packs, but only for 1 mile. Any more, and the soldier could be punished for abusing the natives. So Jesus describes a peasant cheerfully carrying the pack a second mile, while a panicked Roman runs after him, begging, give it back, before my centurion sees. That's not meekness. That's street theater. That's humiliation turned back on the occupier through exaggerated obedience. And everybody in Jesus' audience would have gotten the jokes. They aren't rules. They're tactics designed to crack the illusion of absolute power. They use irony, exaggeration, and social embarrassment to reclaim basic human dignity in situations where violence would only reinforce oppression. And this is where most white, middle-class American Christians have struggled to hear Jesus clearly, because we're the empire. These teachings weren't written for people like us, with legal protections, voting rights, and a sense of security. They were spoken to the occupied, the powerless, those held in contempt by the powerful. So when we read these sayings as sweet moral advice, we miss what they actually are. Humor as resistance. Satire aimed upward. Cleverness deployed by the powerless against systems that depend on fear and humiliation to survive. Jesus isn't telling people to accept abuse. He's teaching them how to outwit it. Look at what happened in Portland and elsewhere recently. Facing down heavily armed federal agents in full Fallujah battle rattle, protesters have shown up wearing inflatable unicorn, frog, and giraffe costumes, dancing around in absolutely ridiculous outfits. Not because they don't understand the danger, but because satire, joy, and a refusal to hate short-circuits the fear that authoritarian power craves. When I first saw the video of Renee Good being shot, I knew the moment violence became inevitable. When she smiled at Jonathan Ross and said, "That's fine, dude. I'm not mad at you." That was it. in her friendly refusal to cower and show him the panic-stricken deference that he felt he deserved, her demeanor broke something in him. Why? Because insecurity is brittle. It cracks easily, and it lashes out when it feels it's being mocked. What the people who first heard Jesus advocating resistance knew from experience, and that has been completely lost on us, is that what Jesus is asking us to do is not frivolous or shallow. It's strategic. Jesus knew that when you refuse to mirror brutality with brutality, you expose it as grotesque and absurd. You deny it the heartless emotional payoff that it seeks. You don't grant it the seriousness it longs for. In moments like this, good humor, joy, and graciousness are not frivolous, and it can be dangerous. People who are secure in themselves don't need to dominate. There's give and take. They're not threatened by differences, by change, or by humor. All the things authoritarianism hates. That's why authoritarian movements, both religious and political, always attack artists, comedians, satirists, and anyone who refuses to demonstrate the proper and solemn mean-spiritedness approved by the authorities. From Woody Guthrie, Tom Lehrer, Nina Simone, Bob Dylan, to Frank Zappa, Tracy Chapman, and the Kinks, countless musicians have put themselves out there as musical court jesters, exposing politicians, naming cruelty, and laying bare the truth that folks might otherwise not be able to hear if not through music. One of my favorite contemporary examples, Jesse Wells, was nominated for 4 Academy Awards this last week for naming names and mocking false patriotism in his satirical protest songs. You may have heard this one.
Well, if you're looking for purpose in the current circus, if you're seeking respect and attention, if you're in need of a gig that'll help you feel big, come with me and put some folks in detention. Just last week was kind of rough. I put a kid in cuffs and zip-tied a woman to a van. We can sneak around town hunting working folks down. I hear they get a great benefit plan. Join ICE, boy, ain't it nice. Join ICE, take my advice. If you're lacking control and authority, come with me and hunt down minorities. Join ICE. Well, I failed the academy, the cops weren't having me, the army didn't sound that fun, so I found me a paramilitary operation that was keen to hand me a gun. See, I got picked on in school, I never felt that cool, there's a hole in my soul that just rages. All the women turned me down, they told me I was a clown. Well, won't you look at me now, I'm putting folks in cages. At ICE, they got great hours, join ICE for respect and power. They got a sign-on bonus of 50 grand. They're in need of you needing to feel like a man. Join ICE. Join ICE.
Friends, serious times do not require joylessness. Some might object,
"This is no time for humor."
But that objection misunderstands both humor and seriousness. Joy is not the opposite of seriousness. It's the opposite of despair. And despair is exactly what authoritarian systems rely on. As our wisdom from Proverbs reminds us, a crushed spirit dries up the bones. And I don't know about you, but these are days when I need to be reminded to seek out the good medicine of a joyful heart. And not just for my own sake. In this moment when federal power is being abused, when corruption is flaunted, when truth is treated as optional, and empathy is rejected as weakness, we need to be reminded that a joyless population is easier to control. A fearful population is easier to manipulate. And as religious language is routinely misrepresented and deployed to justify harm, exclusion, and state violence, we see how easily humorless religion can be weaponized. That's why Jesus used humor, irony, and absurd images everywhere, asking people to imagine camels being shoved through the eyes of needles, a bunch of blind guides leading other blind people tumbling into ditches, and critics with logs in their own eyes trying to see splinters in the eyes of others. Laughter creates community, and community threatens power. You might also recall that in the Beatitudes, Jesus calls a bunch of people blessed. And guess what? It's not the successful, the righteous, the powerful, or the respected. As usual, Jesus turns people's expectations upside down and declares the poor, the grieving, the hungry, and the hated as blessed. And in keeping with today's wisdom, it might be helpful to acknowledge that the word we translate from the Greek as blessed, makarios, is actually closer to happy, fortunate, and to be envied. What? Yeah, because joy, dignity, and perseverance do not belong to those who dominate, but to those who refuse to be crushed. A rabbi was asked why God created laughter. He replied, "So truth can enter through doorways that fear would otherwise keep locked." Friends, when people stop laughing, power hardens. When power hardens, cruelty follows. That's why tyrants hate jokes, and why joy is never neutral. As Proverbs says, it's good medicine, and a community capable of wielding that medicine is a community capable of endurance and of being sustained for the hard work of seeking justice. A simple aphorism heard in dissident circles is, if a leader laughs when mocked, they're strong. If a leader arrests comedians, they're afraid. We're living in a time when comedians are under threat. Friendly moms are shot in the street. Every attempt is being made to normalize cruelty, to sanctify oppression with religious language, and turn fear into a civic virtue. In such moments, joy becomes resistance. Not cheerfulness, not denial, but a joy that refuses to let fear have the last word. Joy that insists on human dignity in the face of dehumanization. Joy that mocks pretension, exposes lies, and keeps communities alive. If we desert this gift, the joke's on us. We will have missed one of Jesus' most effective means of subverting the principalities and powers arrayed against the world that he envisioned. So find your joy. Embrace punching up against the powers that be. And remember, being a bad Christian is no joke. Be well. Hey, if you liked what you heard today, buy me a coffee. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information or to support this outreach with a donation, visit www.wepuTloveFirst.org.